Yes, I'm looking forward to talking with you.
Oh, I am too, especially after I saw everything that you do with chickens. I raise them too.
Oh, you're kidding. Are you a chicken person?
Oh, I am totally a chicken person, yes. Although mine aren't as gorgeous as yours. I go for the more domestic types, but you have some really gorgeous breeds there. I'm looking at the Country Woman magazine.
Oh, well, they do look pretty nice in those pictures, but I'm sure that, you know, every chicken is beautiful in its own way.
Yeah,
I think that's what attracts me about them is they're so, their personalities are somewhat like humans in a strange way, but then they're beautiful. They have so many different shapes and forms.
Oh, they do. They do. I haven't been into this too terribly long, about 4 or 5 years now, so I'm learning a lot. Before I raised chickens, I didn't realize how intelligent they can be, how social they can be.
They're so social, and they're funny. Psychiatrists always have a fish tank because, mm-hmm. you know, it just gives you something to kind of track and wonder about and admire. And chickens are like the perfect thing because there's all these like little problems you have to solve every day, but no really big problems like when you have a dog and the dog, you know, gets sick or
right.
gets old. It's just so sad. It's like a member of the family. But the chickens, they're not as needy. They're like happy in their own little world.
Mm-hmm.
It's like chick world.
Now, mine free range. From the pictures I see in this magazine, yours have this beautiful coop that they live in, yes?
We have so many predators. I mean, I just had a hawk. Yeah, yesterday morning, I couldn't figure out why the ducks had come inside because they have a flight pen that has a roof and, you know, they're completely protected.
Yeah.
But they just didn't like this big hawk, you know, sitting on their roof and looking at them. But we have bear, we have, you know, weasels and fisher cats and they're just all like ready for meals, ready to eat. That's what I call them if you let them loose.
Well, I struggle with that one. I do free range mine. I have a little farm where I live, and I've lost some to hawks, to weasels, to raccoons. And at some point I thought, is this really the way I want to do it? But, you know, they seem to enjoy it so much. And most of the time I can go a year or two without any losses. So,
yeah, that's good. That's good. Well, mine, in the summer, we go out to the Berkshires. My husband's in the Boston Symphony, and they have a festival out there. So we have like a log cabin that we go to for really 3 months. And I let them loose when I'm down there at their coop. And then I'm just right there. Now, that's not to say a hawk couldn't come like right at my feet because they are so brazen.
Yeah.
But it hasn't happened. I've had them for going on 20 years, and I've not had anybody get lost that way. So. Yeah, I like them to be able to go hunt for bugs and, you know, there might be some like minerals and stuff in the soil that is good for them because they're always like pecking at things. But I do have a fence around this yard because our neighbor has a poodle that is supposed to be, have one of those collars. And it came, she forgot to put the collar on, it came roaring over when I had them out. And sure enough, it just came and grabbed one of my chickens and killed it.
Ouch. Yeah.
In 2 seconds, right in front of me,
Yeah.
So now I have a fence for their, so they get to, you know, be out there when I'm feeding and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then the dog, you know, will have that one barrier before it can't, you know, if she ever forgets to do it again, which is totally possible.
Yeah.
Anything's possible, right?
Well, I've been reading your beautiful, beautiful book, The Gingerbread Christmas, and there's that gorgeous rooster.
Yeah, that's his name's Elf. He's going to go with me on the trip. Now, I'm not sure if it's going to be Elf or it's going to be Sunny Boy.
On your tour? He's going to be along on the bus? Oh, how wonderful.
Yes. So he'll have a girlfriend with him or wife, you know, female.
One of his harem.
And they have a nice box that they live in and with a perch in it. And you know what? On my day off, I bring a wire pen that I can open up and they can go out and get some sun and stuff. It's winter time, so it's not really.
Yeah.
They won't get grass. Sometimes maybe they will. We're not really going south this year. We're going more north. But then they'll fly home, which will be interesting. We've done it before, but I hope he doesn't crow on the plane. I mean, he'll be carry-on luggage. You know, he'll be with me.
Oh, wow. That's another book there you have to write just about that.
Yeah,
Your traveling chickens.
Well, I'm just so afraid they're going to say, you have to arrange it.
Yeah.
But then you never know if the gate person is going to be, in the same program as the,
exactly.
The institutional airline people. So, I'm always a little nervous. We took a bunny one year and different creatures. Because the kids love it.
Exactly.
The kids love it. They do. And so many of them, they're like, they're fearful. And I go, you don't have to be afraid. It's really, they're so fluffy and friendly and everything. They would never hurt anybody.
And it's not just chickens. When I was reading up about you, your turtles and you have the wonderful pond that you keep.
Yep, we have our pond.
Yeah, so you must get a lot of inspiration from your surroundings and these various kinds of animals around you.
I really do. And the biggest inspiration is winter, to be able to have the whole world transformed with a big snowfall.
Mm.
It's just, and you think, Massachusetts, we're near the water. We had, 2 years ago, we had 9 feet of snow.
Wow.
It was just amazing. Our bird bath, which is heated, was like, you had to get on a stepladder and look down this little hole, and that's where the bird bath would be. Of course, no birds went down there to get water, but I guess they got them. It was just amazing. And the cutest thing was we have this one bunny that's in my husband's office next to me, and he has like an open pen, and the snow was right above the windows. And a wild bunny would come every day and like look in and
how
say,
sweet.
Like, who are you? Look like a bunny, but how come you're in there?
Oh, that's
just adorable.
We see
the footprints.
Yeah, yeah.
It was so cute. It was so cute.
Oh, you're a woman after my own heart. I do,
that's
too.
That's my biggest inspiration is snow. I love to be out in it. I like to run in it. I just love snow.
Oh, how wonderful to hear. I don't find too many people who feel about winter the way I do. It's my favorite season.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Well, we have a snowplow that comes and does our driveway. We have a long driveway.
Mm.
So if I had to actually physically shovel,
mm-hmm.
maybe my feelings wouldn't be quite so so happy about it. If I had a job where I had to leave the house at like 6:30 or 7 and I had to shovel the driveway
true.
In the morning, that would be different.
That's true. Well, let's talk about, I think we have been talking about your books because I think so much of what we've talked about appears on these pages. But I'm curious, when you start approaching a new project, what comes to mind, words or images, or does it vary?
Well, it flip-flops back and forth. So I'll have an idea, and I usually will go to my editor and say, like, I've got an idea. And then I will kind of think in my mind, is that something I can will sustain me for a whole year? Because I want to be able to feel like there's this discovery, this curiosity, there's learning. All these things are just going to kind of build up this momentum up. Because every day for that whole year, I'm going to be working on that book. And if it doesn't capture my interest, that was a little bit of a challenge with The Gingerbread Baby, because this is my third book.
Mm.
And so I've made gingerbread men. And I guess what really inspired me with this book was more the music part, because I love music and my husband's a classical musician.
Right.
And there's always been this part of me that it's such an important part of my life, because every week I go to a concert. And I just hope that children, not everybody is privileged enough to be exposed to it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was a little girl, my mother was one of the ladies that organized children in the public schools to go into the Boston Symphony and go to the youth concerts. And I went, and I wasn't really, it wasn't my favorite thing to do. I went, it was interesting. I kind of focused on making my program into a paper airplane and going over the balcony and seeing how far we'd go, which is definitely not cool. And also, I was fascinated by the conductors. At the time, it would be like 1965. Mm-hmm. He had this blue velvet jacket. I thought, oh my God! My father just had one of those. But I was like really fast. But all the instruments and so forth. And then now it's it's just great to be exposed. I just think it'd be wonderful if all children were just be able to go to a hall and listen to a concert. And then they just kind of have permission for the rest of their lives. They know what it is. They can go.
Yeah.
Instead of having feeling like, oh, you know, this is something I have to get dressed up for. I have to, you know, have some kind of knowledge about, which you really don't. You can just go and listen. And so I put all the instruments in Gingerbread, which was great fun. And then I had this news notes that I showed different members of the orchestra that are, they're sort of friends, you know, people that I, you know, they know me. Mm-hmm. And I asked, and I described briefly their instrument, because when I was little, and I think in most schools, you have chance to take, you know, borrow their instrument, like could be a clarinet. For me, it was a clarinet. You get to choose an instrument that you find interesting, and then you get to rent it from the school, or they give it to you for a couple of years, and then you can take lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And then at a certain point, then you have to, the parents have to, you know, chip in and help out with the lessons, and you go to a teacher that's more specifically attuned to your instrument.
Right.
And I would just love children to have the opportunity to think about it. And is that something they would like to do? Because talent just strikes. It doesn't matter if your parents are musicians or you have musical people in your family. Sometimes it's just your ability to manipulate this instrument, and then you're just a human being and you're musical.
Mm.
And so I just think it'd be great. So that was kind of the way I made this Gingerbread story a little bit personal. And it kind of sustained me to make it interesting throughout the book. So the instruments have faces and stuff, which was really fun to do. Really silly.
Oh, they're gorgeous illustrations. And you work in watercolor, yes? These are all watercolors?
Yes.
Yeah.
I sketch it out. I do a book dummy first. And this will be really fun. This is what I look forward to in this book tour that I'm going to. Is that I have I bring my easel, because on this bus I'm able to bring all my stuff with me.
Yeah.
So I bring an easel and my markers, and I give the kids like a drawing lesson, a drawing lesson. And I will, I don't read the book. I think in terms of telling them how I got the idea and like a little bit of a roadmap on how to do it so they can go home and write their own book or do their own drawing. So it's great fun for me to be able to do that, and I know a lot of kids are exposed to artists. Either they have an aunt or uncle or somebody who does crafts, but I specifically a book artist, I think, is really good for them to
mm-hmm.
be able to understand how that to be on that side of it, the creative side,
yeah.
Because we do so much with you know, going to movies and the internet and stuff, but it's great to be the creator. And that's what I want to encourage them to do.
As I was going through your book list, too, it seems like a lot of times you take old fairy tales or old folk tales and kind of rework them your way.
Yeah. So the first Gingerbread story, when I was little, I loved the idea of this transformation and of this, you know, comes out of the oven alive.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was really discouraged when he got eaten, because I thought, and he's a little bit mischievous and rascally, and that's the way I was when I was little. And I always felt like, you know, it took a little while to get in step with, like, what was okay to do and what was not okay to do, as all children do.
Mm-hmm.
But the Gingerbread Boy, he wasn't really horribly bad or mean. He just was rascally.
Yeah.
And then he got eaten, so I thought, well, that was a little harsh. Because once he was talking and had a personality and stuff, I thought it was kind of sad. So then that's why I said, I'm going to change the end of it. Keep all the good stuff about him coming out of the oven too soon and, you know, his personality that's really exuberant and childlike. That's why I like trolls, too, because they kind of take the place of being a child, where you're not really, you know, you have all this energy and sense of discovery and
it's not a
curiosity.
Maliciousness. Yeah.
Yeah, and then but then you kind of have to learn the rules. Like, you can't, when you go to the birthday party, you can't take the big pink rose in the middle of the cake. That's not for you. That's for the birthday girl.
Well, a little bit of a spoiler alert here, but when I was reading the book, I was a little upset with the human beings, actually, because, you know, they listen to this wonderful music, and then it's like, well, wait a minute, this is a cookie.
Yeah, and then it was this little girl, little Aunt Sophie.
Uh-huh.
And so at the end, that's why I have at the end, it's kind of subtle, but she hears the Gingerbread baby has to do the hardest thing he's ever had to do, which is to be completely quiet and perfectly still. But then she hears a little voice And she doesn't say anything because she's kind of learned, or she realizes what happened by just kind of blurting out, oh, it's a cookie, and that starts the merry chase. And the gingerbread baby gets out of it, but then she, at the end, she realizes, boy, this is something very special. She's not going to let anybody know.
Yeah, yeah.
So it kind of has a little bit of a twist at the end, or a turn where she has this little knowledge now that here's this magical thing. I don't want to ruin it.
Yeah. Well, you know, as any of us who have had children or grandchildren, we know that we get to read those favorite books many, many, many times over and over again. So the treat with yours is there's a visual treat there, and every time you look at it, you're going to spot a different detail. There's so much detail.
Oh, thank you.
Oh,
well, you know, that's
delightful.
The way I was when I was little. When I was little, I loved books that I felt like I could walk inside the pages.
Mm-hmm.
And because I wanted to be an illustrator since I was like 5 or 6, I'm going to tell the kids that. Because, you know, when I do these signings,
yeah,
I have a half an hour of, you know, I tell them about getting ready to do the book and what it involves and everything. You know, hopefully it sounds really fun and they'll want to do it. But when I was in kindergarten, I knew I wanted to be an illustrator, and I have this great respect for kids having their own sense of, you know, dignity about what they like and what they mm-hmm. like drawing and what they like reading about. And for me, I used to promise myself, I'd say, now when I grow up and be a children's book illustrator, I'm going to put lots of detail in there because I want to feel like,
yeah,
you know, it's really described in a way that is not babyish or I'm not being talked down to. I couldn't
mm-hmm.
stand that.
Right.
So I had some books that I loved, Beatrix Potter, and my parents were great at reading me. Well, I had a lot of storytellers in my family, but I also had my mom. We always had a story at night, and my mom loved Beatrix Potter, and I did too.
Oh, I did too.
She would put in these words that I didn't understand, but I could figure out because it would be in context. So
exactly.
I try to do that too in my books.
Yeah.
And then she would put little visual clues
mm-hmm.
that you would just go, like, well, my favorite animal is a hedgehog. And so there's Mrs. Tiggy Winkles. And then she has the little prickles coming out of her clothes. And I just thought that was the coolest detail because I'd go, oh, yeah, that'd be really sharp. And they would go through her clothes, and they would kind of hold them in place. I just thought that was really, you know, as a little kid, we don't have hedgehogs in the U.S.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was such an interesting way that she could tell me about this animal that I've never seen or touched.
Yeah.
By looking at the pictures, I would know, hey, those prickles are really sharp.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really a gift. And as a child, you don't really have a huge vocabulary or the experience, but you are definitely, you know, brilliantly smart, and you have strong emotions, and you have all the gifts. It's just that you just haven't had a lot of world experience. And so it's great to have a book that will address that and not be too simple.
I love what you said a little while ago, though, Jan, is that the words don't have to always be so simple. I remember that as a child, too, you know, that you get
you
the
do.
Context, you get the photos or the paintings or the illustrations. You don't need to. And that's how you can actually expand a child's vocabulary, get them to wonder.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, as an adult, we think of, oh, we have to learn something. Like, let's say we get a new computer program. We go, oh, now I have to go and study this. Or a new car.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. It doesn't sound like it's going to be fun. But when you remember back to when you're 6 years old, getting a new word to say is, like, great. You can't,
yeah,
you know, there's no downside to it. It's fun to learn things. It's fun to remember
mm-hmm.
and to learn. And it's only when we get to be adults that we kind of feel like we have to dole it out kind of slowly. You know, is there room in there for any more information? There, meaning our brains. But I don't know, maybe that's just me personally. But when you're a child, that's what I love about illustrating for and writing for that age, is because they're so absorbent and have so much mental energy.
Yeah,
it's just great. Yeah. It's just very inspiring. It puts me back in that place a little bit, which is really, it's rejuvenating.
So you're coming to Kalamazoo, and the bus itself is a treat. How do
Isn't
you do
great?
That? Yeah, describe your
bus.
Oh,
publisher does it. The publisher does it. It happened when we at when 9/11 happened. Our publisher, there were quite a few authors out on the road, and it was very difficult to get them back, and there was a lot of difficulty with flights and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the publisher decided that they weren't going to do any book tours that year, but Joe and I said, oh, we've got to do a book tour, so we went by car.
Yeah.
And we loved it because we brought to get to bring our own, all our stuff. And then being an orchestra, member of the orchestra, they also sometimes have different groups, like Linda Rodstad was coming, and she had her tour bus, and Joe was backstage, you know, as he always mm-hmm. is, getting his double bass out, and he just happened to see the bus, and he said to the bus driver, oh, you mind if I look the bus? And he goes, oh, yeah, come on aboard, and he saw that it had, they were two bus drivers, and they had bunks, and they had, you know, a little kitchen, and a great big bed in the back. The whole last quarter of the bus is a big bed with, you know, a bathroom and a shower.
Mm.
And so he said, so he talked to the publisher. He said, you know, we can go to so many smaller towns that you would, that aren't necessarily, you know, close to Chicago, Boston, New
right.
York, which used to be, you know, you can't really take a big flight and a little flight and still do two book signings a day.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's the goal, is to do two a day to kind of get the momentum. And, you know, I don't have that, and a lot of time I can spare. So we go out for about 2.5 to 3 weeks, and then we drive during the night. So then I'm all of a sudden I'm open in the evening,
mm-hmm.
which before I would have to be going to the airport.
Right.
And this way I just, after the book signing, I just like usually go to sleep with all my clothes on, like plunk on the bed face down. But I have all my own food. If bad news, I get a cold or something, I can just curl up and, you know, be
right.
ready for the next signing.
Mm.
And I just have been a lot healthier as far as getting colds and stuff because, you know, I think I'm rested. And Joe goes with me. So no matter what happens, you know, knock on wood, we can, like, laugh about it, you know,
yeah.
at night. We'll have, like, a little dinner on the road. You know, Joe will get some takeout and we'll have, you know, a little dinner, you know, as we're driving down the road. And there's really a knack to be able to walk in that bus, believe me. We try not to do too much walking around because you can really...
I was
going
to ask, yeah, you must get approached. I mean, with this huge bus that's basically a billboard on wheels.
Yeah.
Every time you make a rest stop, you must get approached, which is kind of the purpose, too.
Yeah, in a way it's good because sometimes we'll be driving along
mm-hmm.
and with Wi-Fi and everything, someone will say, so we'll be saying, we're in the back seat of this, of the maroon, you know, Land Rover, and we see you and we're next to you or something.
Oh, fun.
When we're driving down the road, it's hysterical.
Yeah.
And I'll often have people say, you know, call me that, you know, this is your daughter's friend. We just saw your bus go by.
Well,
it would be
works.
Really funny.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah, it's great.
So when are you going to be in Kalamazoo, Jan?
Okay, I am going to be on 5 o'clock on Saturday, December 3rd. Yeah, okay, 5 o'clock we're going to be at the campus at Western Michigan.
Okay.
And that's
where the radios is. Okay.
So that I have room to be able to do my talk and my drawing demonstration, which is like an art lesson. And I have all these secrets that I've collected over the years, and there's been a lot of years that I've been doing this, that I'm going to share with the children that I think they'll all be able to use. They'll be fun ones. And then I'll do a drawing. I'll probably be the gingerbread baby, but I'll, you know, show them shading and things. And then we have news notes for every person who comes, posters for the first 100 people, and the posters are beautiful. The publisher does them.
Mm.
And then, I mean, you could frame them. They're just lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And I always, like, not any writing on the artwork, because then you can even cut off the writing and have, a picture.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Hedgie's going to be there, who's a big costume, like, you know, a Disney character, but he's, you know, life-size.
Mm-hmm.
And you can have your picture taken with him, and the bus has all the stops, so you can find where your stop is and stand in front of it. And let's see, what else do we have? I think that's it. The news note, oh, buttons. We have a button for everybody that comes. The 100 posters, my demonstration, and then I have book plates. So if you have books at home or you have books from the library, they'll probably just do one book per person unless it's slow, and then I'll do more. I'll do as many as I can. Mm-hmm. And I'm there for 2 hours, but it's really 3 hours, but they just publicize 2 hours. So we try to get as many people as we can, and then the book plates are beautiful. They're full color. I mean, I probably lose money on every book. They're so pretty. So that, you know, and then I have a little stamp that I have especially made just for that particular year. So I actually have 3 stamps this year. So then I put a little stamp in your book if you want it. So one stamp is a gingerbread baby doing his somersault. Then I have another stamp. This is the one probably you would like, that has the Polish rooster and the little gingerbread baby standing side by side. And then I have another stamp that has the French horn that's with musical notes.
Well, what fun.
And then I'll bring the rooster out, but it's going to be a surprise. I have a box that I cover with, you know, it looks just like it could be anything.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
don't realize it's going to be. And then and hopefully he'll be quiet and not crow. Give it
what
away.
What fun. Well, we're looking forward to it, Jan. Can't wait.
So we're putting a lot of energy into this because it means so much to be able to thank people for coming out and that love reading and that love books and that care enough. And, you know, one last thing that is interesting is it's not just children that love the books, but a lot of times it's teachers will come, librarians.
Oh, yeah.
And now, because of Harry Potter, a lot of the older kids will come because it's kind of a thing to be, it's okay to be nostalgic about your books.
Mm-hmm.
So they come, which is very sweet. It always, like, takes me aback. You know, what are you doing here? You're like 16. And they'll say, well, I loved my books.
Yeah.
They'll come and have it signed. It's very sweet.
Well, thanks so much for taking time to talk with us today, Jan. It's been a complete delight.
Well, say hi to your chickens.
I will do that.
Hope you get lots of good eggs.